Right now, I'm very happy to introduce to you Drew Courtney, Director of Communications with the group People for the American Way. Drew, thanks so much for being here with us tonight.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And, Drew, before we get started on our topic, the ethics and the challenges to Mr. Chief, not Chief Justice, but our, thankfully not, Clarence Thomas, Justice on the Supreme Court. Tell our listeners just a bit about your organization, People for the American Way.
Well, People for the American Way was founded in the early 1980s, basically to keep an eye on what we perceive to be a movement to close down and redefine what it meant to be an American. And what we believe the American way is free expression, the right to cast a vote that counts, the right to have a day in court of law if that's what's needed, and equal opportunity for all people. And so for the last 30 years, we've been working on that on a broad range of issues.
Yeah, including really highlighting some of the extremist groups in this country and the religious right, of course, which is still riding high in terms of influence on the Republican Party, especially.
It's absolutely riding high. It's been very interesting to see the religious right and the Tea Party working together on a lot of these elections and issues.
Yeah, and I don't claim to know a lot about the Tea Party and the Christian right, but certainly they disagree on some things. I mean, the libertarian philosophies of a few of the Tea Party folks comes into conflict with the religious right, but you don't see a lot of that conflict coming out into the open too much.
No, actually what we've found again and again is these places where we think that there would be an alliance between progressives who believe in kind of a libertarian philosophy that families have the right to make their own choices around reproductive rights, that gay and lesbians deserve to live their lives as they see fit. In those instances, the Tea Party moves very far away from its libertarian principles. And we've seen a real kind of scary merging of the economic right and the religious right, sometimes under the name of the Tea Party, sometimes under the name of the religious right, working together much more closely than I think a lot of people understand.
Well, this is a topic we should invite you to come to discuss at another time, but wanted to talk about Justice Clarence Thomas and just begin summarizing a little bit of what I know, and that is activist groups on the left, including Common Cause and your group, People for the American Way, and some media outlets are shining a spotlight on the disturbing behavior of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas for what appears to be questionable ethics on accepting gifts from litigants with cases before the Supreme Court and ignoring financial disclosure laws. Tell our listeners a bit about some of the facts that have come to light about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and your concerns.
Sure. You know, the concerns are really that there's been a broad pattern of ethically dubious behavior that we've gotten from Justice Thomas. And there's some around disclosure, some around acceptance of gifts, some around whether or not he's filled out the disclosure forms. And in some ways, the disclosure questions are the most questionable because those verge on what could be criminal behavior, and we really need answers from him. You know, on one hand, that one item that's been recently highlighted by the New York Times in a very extensively, thoroughly reported piece is his relationship with a billionaire investor named Harlan Crow, who has, through either his own personal connections or through organizations he's been on the board with, given Thomas a tremendous amount of gifts. So, for instance, Thomas accepted a bust of Lincoln from the American Enterprise Institute, on whose board Harlan Crow serves, worth $15,000. He accepted a $19,000 Bible owned by Frederick Douglass. He's been on Harlan Crow's yacht. He's been hosted at his estates in California, in Texas, in the Adirondacks. And Crow even donated $500,000 to Justice Thomas's wife's Tea Party group when she was starting it up. So all of this money, which had not been, in many cases, not been previously disclosed at all, is a really uncomfortable situation for anybody who believes that in the court of law you should be able to go in and be heard, whether you're rich or poor, equally. What we've seen is that organizations on whose board Harlan Crow serves have had a great track record with Justice Thomas before the court. So he's on the board of the American Enterprise Institute. The American Enterprise Institute has filed brief in three cases, and what do you know? Justice Thomas agreed with them in all three. On the Center for Community Integrity, they filed eight briefs before the court. And in that case, Justice Thomas has agreed with all eight. Now, it's unclear exactly in each case, is there a quid pro quo? We don't know. But we need answers from Justice Thomas about why he's accepted these things, what is the extent of his relationship, and why isn't he recusing himself from these questionable cases?
What's the response of Justice Thomas to these allegations of his crossing the line on ethics?
Well, they have been very typical for Justice Thomas, and that is so far they have been essentially silence, at least since the last round of allegations came out. Justice Thomas very famously this February made it 5 years without having asked a question in any oral argument case before the Supreme Court. And so far, that's basically what we've gotten from him in response to that. We say he's totally entitled not to ask questions if that's the way he sees fit. But at this point, he really does need to answer them, and that's what we're pushing for more than anything else. In the past, he's said about other allegations, these are liberal attempts to discredit the court, to smear me personally. But when you look at the facts, that doesn't hold up. We haven't gotten any answers. We haven't gotten any explanations, and we really need them.
Drew Courtney is our guest tonight on Counterpoint here on WPKN Radio, and then Drew is the Director of Communications with the group People for the American Way. We're talking about some of the serious questions around the ethics of Justice Clarence Thomas serving on the Supreme Court. Drew, tell us a little bit about the Koch brothers' political events and Justice Thomas and Antonin Scalia's attendance of some of these political events, and how that is a question regarding how that raises questions about ethics.
Sure, and to clarify, you know, the Koch brothers, this is a whole other incident from the Harlan Crow incident. So this is what we talk about when there's a pattern. There's a lot to go back and talk about. In 2007 and 2008, both Justice Thomas and Justice Scalia attended private political meetings that were being sponsored by the Koch brothers, who are conservative billionaires who have unleashed just a tremendous amount of money in the elections through groups like American for Prosperity, through their own donations, through other organizations. They have they've made a huge impact, and they've been really loosed by this decision in Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission, which removed most of the limits about what they can do in terms of influencing our elections. So they went to this private political briefing, and on the disclosure forms, they basically said that their travel was paid for by the Federalist Society. And it was paid for by the Federalist Society, but the Federalist Society was not hosting any events there. These were closed-doors decisions, conversations about plainly political topics, about turning back the Obama agenda, about putting conservatives in office. And that's hugely inappropriate. The Judicial Code of Ethics, which does not apply to Supreme Court justices, which is one of the problems, makes very clear that there should be no appearance of impropriety. And now, we don't know for sure whether there's total impropriety, what the conversations were, but those conversations should not be going on behind closed doors. That's exactly what the Code of Conduct is designed to avoid. But so far, both Scalia and Thomas have been utterly unrepentant about their behavior in these cases.
Drew, what can you tell us about the difference between the appearance of impropriety when it comes to ethics and actual violations of ethics rules? What makes this very difficult, of course, is that the judicial ethics standards of federal judges don't apply to Supreme Court justices.
Exactly. So, and we've been told by justices in the past that they don't apply to Supreme Court justices, but the Supreme Court justices, of course, uphold those same standards anyway, even though they don't technically apply. We're seeing that that is not really the case, at least in these instances. But there are some laws that govern the behavior of Supreme Court justices. Most importantly, these disclosure laws that we see. Just like many other public officials, they're required to disclose their income, gifts that they've received, so that we can know whether or not they have conflict of interest to a certain degree. It's not everything we'd like to know, but it is a certain amount. And that's in some of the most troubling instances around Clarence Thomas in particular. In a couple of cases, going back to Harlan Crow, Justice Thomas would appear at an event in one case, Crow's alma mater, Southern Methodist University, and he says, well, my travel was paid for by the university. But the New York Times did an examination of records, and they found out, well, by coincidence, Harlan Crow's private plane was flying to and from Washington at what seems to be exactly the same dates that Justice Thomas was traveling. There was a similar incident in which he spoke at an event at the Savannah College of Art, where a museum or a building was being dedicated in his honor. He said the Savannah College of Art paid for his flight there or paid for his travel expenses, and yet we see that Harlan Crow's plane seems to match his travel itinerary very closely. And those aren't the only two cases. Now, we don't have details about what exactly happened in those trips. Nobody has been forthcoming with who was reimbursed. But it would be very disturbing to think, and beyond disturbing, actually illegal, for him to be falsifying those records and deliberately trying to hide that. That is, you know, plainly against the law. And this isn't the first time he's run afoul of disclosure requirements. It was recently reported, just earlier this year, that Ginny Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, was receiving an enormous amount of money that wasn't being reported. Justices are required by law to disclose their spouse's income, but she received almost $700,000 from the Conservative Heritage Foundation between 2003 and 2007, and Clarence Thomas simply checked the box that said none next to his spouse's income. When she founded Liberty Central, which was a right-wing Tea Party group designed to oppose President Obama's health care reform efforts, again, he checked none. We have no idea how much she was getting paid by this group at the time, but Thomas didn't disclose it at all. He then went back and said, oh, well, that was an error. I made a mistake that I didn't file those things, and he amended them. But what we've seen over and over again in the Supreme Court is that if anybody else came before the court and said there was an issue where there was a paperwork error, there was a filing error, someone forgot to handle something, even in the most serious cases, even in cases including the death penalty, Justice Thomas is the first one to throw the book at them, to say that there's no excuse. So he's giving himself leeway that he would not allow any other ordinary person in that court.
When it comes to not filing financial disclosure forms, Drew, what can be done to hold Justice Thomas to account? What standards does he have to abide by? None?
Well, the first thing we need is we need more information. And so people need to keep the pressure on as far as asking for information. But the step that I think would make the most difference is that Congressman Chris Murphy has introduced legislation that would extend the Judicial Code of Ethics up to the Supreme Court. That's very, very important because that would include that would make it very clear why justices were serving on cases, that were sitting on cases, and why they weren't, whether they were recusing themselves in cases where there were instances in which they had an interest or somebody who gave them money had an interest before the court. And I think that's fundamentally what we have to do. There's a move to have hearings in the House. Of course, it's controlled right now by Republicans, so we can't be optimistic about those moving forward. There's a possibility of hearings in the Senate. And I think there's more digging to be done, and there's more digging that is being done to find out exactly what has gone on so far, especially with I think, in my opinion, these flights. And Thomas has got to answer these questions.
Congressman Chris Murphy of our state here in Connecticut, as you said, has this this offering of a piece of legislation. It's, I believe it's called the Supreme Court Transparency and Disclosure Act, which, as you said, ends Supreme Court exemption from judicial ethics standards. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the Republicans who control the House react to that piece of legislation. Drew Courtney, what about other groups of attorneys, associations of attorneys like the American Bar Association? Have they weighed in on this issue of Supreme Court ethics and specifically Justice Thomas and the appearance of impropriety here?
You know, I can't speak to what every other organization has done. I can, you know, speak for a limited set of organizations that I either work for or am intimately familiar with. I do think one thing that's important to note is that there was a letter that was circulated among the legal community that went to Congress basically saying in support of Chris Murphy's legislation, which was signed on by well over 100 law professors around the country, mostly legal ethicists and specialists, who said, you know, this is a serious enough problem that it has got to be addressed right now. And then there have been a lot of other organizations that have taken various tacks, from asking whether or not that there be a Justice Department investigation of whether Thomas and Scalia should have recused themselves from the Citizens United decision, to pushing for more robust hearings in both houses of Congress, to simply trying to make sure that this stays in the headlines and that news organizations are doing their job and continuing to push this. There's been great reporting so far, and we need more of it.
Drew Courtney is our guest tonight, Director of Communications with the group People for the American Way. Drew, I wanted to ask you this. Does the appearance of impropriety and double standards, or I should say a conflict of interest when it comes to some of the gifts that Justice Thomas has received, does that damage the credibility of the Supreme Court, the entire Supreme Court, as you see it?
Yeah, I think in a word, yes, it does. It absolutely does. You know, these are troubling enough allegations that no matter when they were coming, which justice they were aimed at, people would need to take them extraordinarily seriously, gather the information, and demand answers. But I think it's impossible to ignore the context in which they're coming in. What we've seen is over the last 5 years, essentially since John Roberts and Sam Alito came on the court, is a tremendous tilt in Supreme Court jurisprudence, where we've seen over and over again the court seems to bend the law in favor of powerful corporate interests or powerful government interests and against the rights of individual Americans, whether that's the Citizens United decision, whether that's the Walmart decision we saw recently where Walmart was basically ruled too big to sue in a class action sexual discrimination case, or cases where we've seen drug manufacturers are protected by the laws that are supposed to be protecting patients. The court interprets the laws that they were written to protect the drug manufacturers instead. Individuals are having a very, very rough road ahead of them at the Supreme Court. There's already a feeling that if you, as an ordinary person, get your case there, you're going to have a very bad day. And so the fact that we have this pattern of connections between the ultra-wealthy, between powerful corporate interests, directly into the pocketbooks of one of the Supreme Court justices makes it doubly disturbing.
Well said, Drew Courtney. And looking back in history, there was another case of an associate Supreme Court justice named Abe Fortas. I believe he was appointed by Harry Truman, if I'm not mistaken. And he resigned in 1969 over allegations of ethical challenges, accepting money and gifts that appeared to put him in a situation where he had a conflict of interest. Other justices on the Supreme Court and people of Democrats who presumably were in sync with him in a lot of his decisions urged him to resign. We see no such move right now in Washington, even by President Obama or the Democrats in Congress mostly. I mean, they're being pretty quiet about it, with the exception of Congressman Murphy and a handful of others.
Yes, there have been some others who have really spoken out. Congresswoman Louise Slaughter from upstate New York has been very good on this. But you're right, that similarity is staring everybody in the face. Now, there are differences between the two cases. On one hand, Abe Fortas, the money was hidden in a different way, and the people who actually were giving the money were litigants before the court as opposed to just filing briefs. So that's a technical difference. But then on the other hand, you have Abe Fortas returned the money in the end. Clarence Thomas has made no such move to return any of these gifts. So that's very real. I think it speaks to how politicized the courts have become, how, again, going back to what we've seen, the courts are ruling in ways that Congress simply could not make legislation. Americans, when you poll them on an issue like Citizens United, they do not support the Citizens United decision. You and I have spoken about this in the past. Far and away, this is hugely unpopular. Americans won't stand for it. So the only way for the conservative movement to get its change is to put a radical agenda in the court system. And now that they have five or six justices who are willing to impart that agenda, I think there's a real reluctance to call someone out on it because they'd be in danger of losing it, which is a real pity. And talking about the credibility of the court only succeeds because Americans continue to do a significant amount to have faith in it. They don't have an army. They don't have a police force to enforce their decisions. They have moral force to enforce their decisions. And that has been built up over the years by great justices like John Marshall and Thurgood Marshall. And it's been eroded by justices like Abe Fortas and some reactionary others who ruled in terrible ways and made decisions we regret. I think we have a decision now about how we're going to treat the court. Are we going to push it into the political realm where people just defend a guy because he's on your team? Or are we going to continue to treat it as a special institution where the rule of law reigns supreme, where everybody is treated equally, and everybody can have a fair shot at justice?
Well said, Drew. And just a question here about impeachment. Is there a provision in the U.S. Constitution to impeach a Supreme Court justice if there was the political will to do so in Washington?
Yes, there absolutely is. I think that there would need to be more information out, but Congress could hold hearings to get that information. And I think that that's part of why this conversation has to continue. I started off at the very beginning by talking about how this is a complicated issue. It's a pattern of dubious decisions. In many cases, there's not something that's absolutely glaring, like I got a $100,000 check and changed my vote. We can't be defeated by the fact that it's complicated. This has got to be pursued. This has got to be continued, because that's the only way to build will in Washington, so that people will pay attention to something that matters and something that's very important. And that's not only up to people in Washington. That's really up to everybody to continue to shine a light on this, to continue to demand answers of Justice Thomas and also people in Congress. And that's the way that we're going to get justice and more facts about this particular case.
And as we conclude, Drew Courtney, what's an effective way to get active on this issue if people out there are concerned about ethics in the Supreme Court and the stuff that Justice Clarence Thomas is engaged in? What can people do?
Two things that I would ask people to do. The first is, we'd love for you to visit our website, PFAW, People for American Way, PFAW.org. We have a petition in support of Chris Murphy's legislation. But then I would really urge people to do something that I don't think people do often enough, which is to pick up the phone and call your member of Congress and tell them that you want them to become a co-sponsor to sign on to that piece of legislation. The more co-sponsors who are on that, the more seriously that legislation is taken, the more likely it is to get hearings, the more likely it is to pass. And on an issue like this, where people congressmen don't hear a lot about this issue, your call can make a big difference. People should really consider getting on the website, getting on the internet, looking up their congressman's website, giving them a call, and telling them that you want them to support this measure.
And I know one of the issues that's going to come up is that the Supreme Court will very likely in the next year or so be reviewing the individual mandate in the health care reform legislation that President Obama backed. And given the fact, and you mentioned this earlier, that Supreme Court Justice Thomas's wife, Ginny, received $500,000 for an organization that she headed up that was opposed to the health care reform legislation. You know, is Clarence Thomas going to recuse himself from that decision, or should he? And I guess that's another discussion. But if you want to weigh in on that in a couple of words before we say goodnight, that would be good.
I hate making predictions. I don't think he'll recuse himself. But, there's not a lot of case law that supports that being unconstitutional. It's a pretty clear-cut issue that the Obama administration was in the right. We're going to see how that gets treated in today's Supreme Court.
Exactly. Thanks for your time, Drew. And the website, one more time, is pfaw.org, right?
Thanks. That's exactly right.
All right.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care, Drew. Thanks for the work you're doing.
Sure thing.
Bye-bye. Drew Courtney, Director of Communications with the group People for the American Way.